ready. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Justin Troop and Chris Morgan.
What up?
How you doing, guys?
And Horton Dowden.
What's going on?
Hey guys, we're going to be talking about demons today, part two of our Codex Demon coverage.
Well, at least you're over Nurgle's Rot, Paul, to be able to talk about this.
I'm feeling a little bit more myself. I can talk about some of the other things like Tzeentch and Khorne and Slaanesh today.
Yep. You could say it's been a positive change.
Oh, I do want to chat about the locus of trickery. This is one of those rules that I think is going to, one, I think it's going to be something the Tzeentch players may forget their first couple of games they're playing. And then when it works, your opponents are going to wish that you did. I know we talked a little bit about it on the last episode, but this is the Tzeentch locus of trickery. Remember, your detachment gets the characters in the detachment get the demonic Loki if the detachment is dedicated completely to that god. And the Tzeentch one is roll two dice at the start of each fight phase and discard the highest result until the end of that phase. Each time your opponent targets a Tzeentch demon unit within 6 inches of a friendly model with the locus of trickery and makes a hit roll that after rerolls but before modifiers matches your remaining dice result, that hit roll fails. So you roll two dice, you get a four, you discard the highest result, so the lowest is a four. If in the ensuing fight phase, if your opponent rolls a four, those hits are ignored or they fail. They're not ignored. They fail.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be very annoying. Of course, it is situational. It might not work. But the first time your opponent rolls a bunch of fours and you roll two ignored fours, you'll be quite happy and they'll be quite upset.
Yeah, and then we got talking about this in the pre-show, but if you happen to roll boxcars, so, you know, six is your lowest result, then what happens with abilities that trigger on sixes?
That's when the words smithing starts coming into play. It says this hit triggers another hit, but then does that hit really hit when it's negated?
Yeah, so we went to something we know and love, which is the Blood Angel Codex that has Corbulo in there, which is has the red grail. And so in addition, each time you make a hit roll of a 6+ in the fight phase for a model in a friendly Blood Angel unit that is within 6 inches of Brother Corbulo, that model may immediately make another close combat attack using the same weapon. So I take that to mean that you roll the six and the hit fails, but you still rolled a six, so you trigger this other ability, giving you the ability to make another attack. So I think, regardless of this example of making another attack, if you have an ability that triggers on a die roll, you would have still rolled that die roll. And even though that particular hit fails, the trigger would still happen, and you'd get whatever the effect of that would be.
Yep. And I think it's important to point out that we're just reading one example of a rule like this. If there is an ability like that that you have for your own units, and we can't possibly like cover each and every single one of these on the show, just make sure you pay attention to the wording. Because this one just says if you make a roll of a 6+, but...
Yeah, and they could say that another roll might say if you successfully hit or something, you know,
yeah,
who knows, but this is
successful
just
hit, yeah.
Yeah, this exactly. Is just trigger roll. You roll X happens. It just two things happen when X happens. And in our interpretation of this... but this is a potentially very powerful ability. I know we put a lot of focus on the fact about Brimstone's altering in the Changeling altering, but I don't know if this makes up for that. But I believe this is a very strong ability.
Oh, no doubt, especially when you're talking about Tzeentch in general already having the best invulnerable saves of all the demons. Then they have another layer of protection where they are typically considered more vulnerable, which is combat. It could really catch people off guard the first time, you know, you try to get Fateweaver or Tzeentch Demon Prince out of there and you just can't hit enough to do it.
Yeah, and this brings up these keywords here bring up kind of a good point. The fact that it's Tzeentch Demon, and we talk a lot about how that crosses over with Obliterators that happen to have a keyword in the faction section being demon.
Yeah, that is the big question, and that is certainly the demon unit in the Chaos Space Marine Codex. I know a lot of us have been jumping to when hearing about some of these rules.
Also,
they are
demons. Are they demons in the faction?
No, but they have the demon keyword, and so far in the game, there has been nothing distinguishing in the type of keyword. There has only been distinguishing in the keyword.
Yeah, that is a great point. That's something that we as... I want to say list designers, you know, we have to focus on what the information is at hand. But remember that we got that kind of flow chart about when we could expect erratas and FAQs and then major releases. And remember that the Demon Codex isn't technically out yet. All we have to go on is of course, what we have in hand, but it hasn't been released. And so it hasn't fit into that release schedule yet. I think that if I were a betting man, I think we're going to see some tightening up of that faction keyword versus just the keyword itself, and how that may apply to stratagems in this book and maybe effects in this book, and how it applies to other things that just happen to have the demon keyword.
Specifically, we're coming up on a major time for us as tournament players, with a lot of major events back to back to back that are about to hit. So, you know, GW, you know, since they're more involved in the tournament scene now again and helping out, they're going to fix these things. So when we go to these events, if there is these like feel badsies combos, or if there's a misinterpretation of wordings that is a little bit widespread, they're going to clarify for us that information. And we're going to be able to push forward going into tournament season.
Yeah, you want to know what you're doing, right? Yeah, you just want to know what you can count on. And again, I said, to be a betting man, I think that we're going to see some things specifically around, you know, I don't even want to dance around it, what may and may not affect the demon primarchs in an upcoming FAQ. But you never know. I would just imagine. And to answer my own question earlier, the obliterators have the keyword demon in their faction, and the possessed have it in their lower bar keywords, not their faction keyword, much like the warp talents have the keyword demon in their keyword section, not faction keywords.
I'm still confused by all that.
It is strange, but so far in the game, there has been nothing distinguishing what those two things mean, having demon and faction keyword versus demon and keyword. And so agreed.
I think it even says in the rule book too, that the keywords past armyless design, you know, are kind of interchangeable, but you know, who knows as the game evolves.
Yes. I just hope I'm fine with them making whatever ruling or whatever FAQs or erratas they make. I like knowing GW's intent. And so I'm glad we live in a world where GW will clarify their intent.
Indeed. And I think that may be the only reason that we may see something like this come about, is that it just didn't fit in with that overall intent. And I, again, being a fanboy, I don't even mind saying I trust the intent in most of these things.
Yeah, and I would say with a lot of these things, if it feels like an exploit, you can expect it to be addressed. And you know when it feels like an exploit.
But some of those just feel so good, Chris.
I know. Well, I mean, there's a metaphor for this that I probably won't use on air. But that suffice to say that you know it when you see it, and you know what's going to happen to it.
Oh man, I'm with you. Well, you know, we'll see. Again, this book will be released on Saturday of this week, and then I would expect it to filter into the normal cycle of things. Now, of course, this is going to affect people that are going to the next major tournament that's coming up, the big 500 and so person tournament at the LVO Las Vegas Open coming up here towards the end of the month.
Yep, plans are in full swing for that, I can tell you.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've been painting and showing off some of my miniatures that I'm thinking. I think I've actually revised my list a bit. I won't talk about it right now since we're talking about demons, but I've revised my list again to just include some personal choices, because why not? You know, whatever. But we'll talk about it later. So the Khorne Locus of Rage, you can reroll charge rolls for Khorne demon units that are within 6 inches of a friendly model with the Locus of Rage in the charge phase. Now, I don't think we talked about this last time, but like things like Fleshhounds got a point reduction. They're 20 points in the index, and they are 15 points now in the Demon Codex.
Did they lose any statistics for this points decrease?
I don't think so. I think they're pretty much as is, or as they were.
As someone who has 85 Fleshhounds, I'm quite happy to hear about this points reduction.
Let me go over what their stats are.
That's 85. That's a remarkably specific number.
You know, I haven't quite gotten to 88 yet. I'm saving that.
That was my next question. Like, why aren't there 88?
Horton was the definitive Demonkin player, I believe, in 7th edition.
Yeah, it was. I was doing it for a while.
Pinch move, a 3+ weapon skill, a 4 strength toughness, 2 wounds, and that's always been pretty important. A 2 wound creature. that's not a lot of points with an invulnerable save and an armor save in this case, you know, two attacks apiece, and the ability to deny Psyche powers.
Yeah, so they sound the same. So that's great. I mean, now we get to put more puppies out on the field again.
Yeah, I played them when they first came out, but the loss of mobility compared to 7th, plus the fact that they were 20 points, so dramatically more than they were in 7th, made them a tough sell. But if they're going back down to 15 points, especially with all these bonuses associated with pure demon, corn demon attachments, they're going to be back with a vengeance.
What's the power level in the index?
It's 5.
They are power level 4 now in the codex.
Ooh.
Now, why does that matter? Summoning.
Summoning.
Look, the internet is giving me no end of grief telling me that summoning sucks. It does not suck.
It does not suck, and I'll tell you right now, because this won't air until I'm already at the tournament, I'm putting 301 points of summoning into my next tournament army, because it's amazing.
Horton will be at Warzone Columbia, the Scarab Convention, this weekend in South Carolina. It is put on by awesome people. If you're there and encounter Horton, please let us know how it went. I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
Oh, it'll be awesome. It'd be awesome for everyone involved.
But power level 4, I mean, again, it's just a 1 point change, but you know, it can matter on the die rolls. I'm also not saying that you shouldn't build a strategy, your entire strategy around summoning. What I am telling you though is that it's something that you can use if you find yourself being kind of out toolboxed in the area that you play in or in the tournaments you think you're going to. It's something that you can plan for. You could have some small percentage of your army, 10%, 20% of your points or something, set aside to be that kind of catch-all that does something that you need. You could even get around force org limitations.
I've always been in the mindset that summoning in 8th, specifically now, you have to forget how summoning was. It's never going to be that way again.
Yeah.
It was broken.
It's not 3 points.
Yeah, it was broken and it was stupid. Now it makes sense. It has purpose and it has strategy. Summoning is the strategy of its own. You create a list, however many points of what you're going to do, say 1,700 points, and you make the best list you can with 1,700 points. And then now factor in you have 300 points of versatility that can tailor opponent to opponent to opponent to help you get the upper hand.
You don't choose what you bring in until you roll the dice.
Exactly. So I'm not sitting here going, well, I can only summon plague bearers. I can summon whatever the heck I want within the confines of what I've set aside.
The mark of the demon, the character summoning it has to have the mark of whatever it is that you're summoning for the chaos god.
Right.
But still, there's a lot of options. You're going to have some idea of what you're going to bring in. But I think that if you have one character in your army, you probably don't want him always rooted to the same spot. Remember, you have to give up your movement. And that's kind of what I hear, is that you have to give up your movement and people don't want to give up your movement. But in this game, especially if you're doing like multiple battalions or whatever, you're going to have 4 or 5 characters or so in your army that are potentially summoners.
That's exactly right. And especially in an era where characters are not just combat people that run around and try to punch things, but actually have aura buffs and benefits that can still be very good if they don't move, if they stay still, then I think summoning really has a use. We just kind of all overlooked it as the game first came out, but especially with demons coming out, which is, you know, the whole ammunition for summoning, I think it deserves a second look. And you kind of need to consider any demon unit as, okay, how would I play this if I was putting it into my army versus how does it play if I'm summoning it? And so each unit is kind of like 2 units in that regard.
And I don't necessarily want to oversell it because it is. I think it is somewhat specific to a play style or a strategy, but I think that we are too easily overlooking it because it's no longer free units. And maybe on the other side, maybe they did go too far. I mean, with the fact that have to give up movement, you have to roll power level, and then you have to set aside the points. You know, I don't know. But I'm saying that some number of points, if you're playing an army that can utilize this ability, I can see you winning more games by utilizing this strategy than not.
Yeah, there's often times where I find myself in a situation in games where I have like a character in the backfield, and you know, he's buffing, like Horton was saying, my gun line, and then I have nothing back there to protect me. Well, I can summon in something to protect me once you start deep striking everything back there, and that's where you have to start thinking is, you know, how is your list working and how can you incorporate summoning to the strategy to better benefit yourself?
And I think Seekers might have gone the other way, like on the Slaanesh side. What are the point value or the power level for Seekers in the index?
Yeah, they are 5 power level.
They are 6 in the Codex.
Wow.
Now, we may or may have not have talked about how awesome it was to summon Seekers at some point.
Yeah, I mean, they're super strong.
Well, they have such big movement. 14-inch movement is a base stat. And this is not counting their unholy speed, which reroll failed charge rolls for this unit.
Oh, that used That's to be changed. They could advance and charge.
Interesting. But now they can get that through the Loki, so they change that rule. Good thinking, GW. I'm glad they saw that.
Slaanesh, they didn't see that for the Sanguinary Guard.
Slaanesh have the Locus of Swiftness. All Slaanesh demons within 6 inches of a friendly model with this Locus of Swiftness in the charge phase can declare a charge even if they advanced in the movement phase. So now if you happen to be within 6 inches, you can reroll the failed charge rolls, but they did go up the power level.
Did they go up in points or just power level?
That's a good question. Seekers are now 19 points apiece. So same points. Same points.
Interesting. So that would mean that they are more concerned about summoning and open play than they are their impact on match play.
That's a good analysis.
It's just an interesting way to think about a change that is solely power level.
I'm willing to bet that there are a few power level changes in this book, and I have not compared them all one-to-one. I apologize, but that does – it is interesting the way in match play that only affects summoning for the most part.
I tell you what, it's kind of sad to see that we didn't get a Slaanesh Greater Demon upgrade kit yet.
A named one. There's a named Greater Demon in all these for the most part, except Slaanesh yet.
Because when you think about like the speed and the versatility that Slaanesh brings to play an assault army, they're a glass cannon. You know, they're super fast. They get there. They assault. They hit hard. But they just, you know, we're just waiting on that one character model, that big good kit something, and like this. It's kind of sad that there was that missed opportunity, but maybe we might see something extremely cool come for Slaanesh later. I don't know, like maybe Fulgrim. That'd be neat.
If I were betting also, I think that we will see more Demon Primarchs. I mean, we know that in the lore, they exist, like Fulgrim and Angron exist as Demon Princes. And I'm willing to bet that that Magnus and Mortarion have proven to be quite popular.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And I wouldn't even rule out things like, you know, Emperor's Children codexes in the future. But who knows? I think that the reason that we don't have a named Greater Demon for Slaanesh in this book is simply because the model doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of timing. You know, the Bloodthirster was first. Then there was the Lord of Change. And they're spreading it out. You know, now it's the unclean one.
The development time that goes into that is not insignificant.
Oh, no. It's a long process, a big deal.
It's real easy for us as consumer gamers to not understand that.
Well, it's funny when you think about it, because there was a big rumor when the Glotkin came out that was actually supposed to be the Great Unclean One. Somebody made a decision that they didn't like it in the 40K universe, and it was, you know, repurposed a little bit and fit perfectly into Age of Sigmar. I don't know if that's true or not, but it took the Glotkin so long to come out when the first rumors about a Great Unclean One sculpt was coming. And yeah, I want to say it was probably a good 2 years.
Some of that was probably wishful thinking, though. I mean, like, who doesn't want?
You mean Plastic Thunderhawks?
Yeah, who doesn't want a Plastic Thunderhawk? Or
Andor? You set the clock.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get too far into speculation. I just want to, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, it doesn't just magically happen. It takes a whole lot of development time. And then so Slaanesh is still very much in the book, I think. And what about, like, what's the points of the Fiends of Slaanesh?
46 points for a fiend.
They're 46 also in here. With a unit size of 1 to 9.
Yep, that's the same here too.
I know they have the same ability too. Of that, if you can't fall back from them, unless you have fly.
Did their power level change?
They are 2 power level each.
They are 2 power level in the codex as well, or in the index as well. Sorry,
14-inch movement.
Yep.
So it seems to me that when I first read the index, I perceived the fiend to be too expensive for what it did. But when you consider the 14-inch movement, and when you consider the Loki of swiftness that this, I believe that's what it's called, that the Slaanesh demons are going to have with advance and charge, that really does make the Fiend tremendously better.
And remember, it also has the Quicksilver swiftness, which is the base rule of Tzeentch. I'm sorry, of Slaanesh, which is unit always fights first in the fight phase, even if it didn't charge.
Oh, yeah. They're good, man. And they're tar pits, you know, so unless you have fly, you can't get away from them. That's huge.
Well, they have the disruptive song. So psychers within 12 inches of any enemy fiends of Slaanesh must subtract one from any result on their psyche test they take.
That's big, too. You know, psychers are prolific around, so.
It matters. I think that neg one matters.
Neg one matters a whole lot, especially with the beta rules for Smite, that's stacking neg ones, right? So you make it, you can add additional neg ones to powers that are getting neg ones. It's good.
I know we're kind of beating that Slaanesh drum right now, but I guess I just want to mention the fact that it hasn't disappeared from the codex. It still very much exists. You hear rumors all the time about how Games Workshop might not like Slaanesh anymore. And who knows? Maybe some of them don't, but they're still in the codex, and they got rules.
They confirmed that on the Facebook page. Somebody said, I thought Slaanesh was gone, and the Warhammer community specifically said they are very much not gone.
So. Well, there was that big when they overturned the old world for Age of Sigmar and the Great Unclean, not the Great Unclean one, the Great Horned Rat.
Yeah,
essentially took over Slaanesh's spot.
Yeah.
For a while,
because Slaanesh was kidnapped.
Is part of their story or whatever, and I think that I thought that was a bold move, and I could see why people may think that, because it is, let's just say, one of the most controversial looking demon types.
Straight up Hellraiser.
Well, and when you're trying to market some models to 12-year-olds and stuff like that, you know, I can see all the concerns, but that is not represented here in this codex.
Yeah, they're super fun to play too. So they're strong, they're quick, they have a lot of cool manipulation. Don't sleep on them, and you know, if you really love demons, definitely look at these units, because they bring a lot more to the table than people think.
I have a Nurgle themed demon force, and so I paint everything kind of Nurgly. I prefer the aesthetic of Nurgle to the other Chaos factions.
That makes no sense to me, but
that's just what I do.
It is hobby your way, man.
So, but I also try to stick to the lore side of things. And there was a discussion that was going on a public forum about how Tzeentch should not ally with Nurgle.
Like, you shouldn't be allowed to do it? Was that the take of
that you're committing a lore crime when you do it.
Well, just like Khorne and Slaanesh are kind of at odds. But even in the lore, there's situations where they've allied together.
Well, namely, my contribution
is Prime.
Yeah, my contribution to the discussion was just paint your horrors green, and who cares?
Yeah, I have an entire demon army it's all green. It's greens of different shades, but it's all green. Yeah, right down to my blood letters.
My pink horrors are bright green.
So why don't you guys just play orcs then?
Maybe they can.
We like to win.
Different shade of green. It's a different shade of green. And nobody likes to paint in checkerboards.
With orcs, you don't need to make them look clean. They're not Harlequins, Palmer.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. I know we're jumping around, and I apologize. But I got a buddy who has an orc force, but he will never, ever have a fully painted orc force because it takes him days to paint a single model. And so I've known this dude for 15 years. I think he's painted precisely 9 orcs.
That sounds about right.
That is not enough.
Nope. Now, his 9 orcs look amazing, but he's never going to get it done.
That is the best depleted Boyd squad in the world.
Right. He could. Yeah, he's the case in point for fielding understrength units.
Got 9 mobs of one. He can mob them up one at a time to get a 9-man unit.
Sorry, I've gone off topic. I apologize. Ugh. It's just funny. Again, these are things you see, you know, because again, we're all about to hobby accountability, and it's tough being this dude's accountability partner. a lot of work to be done.
So you got 2 edge highlights in today. Like, congratulations.
Oh man. The demon, back on Demon Codex, talking about the power and the structure and stuff around the Demon Codex, the Codex has a lot of what makes things competitive in 40K right now. You've got things like the Nurglings that are able to break some of those deployment rules, which is so handy when you're going to be when you might be deep striking things in, when you want to force your opponent into certain areas of the board that may make your assault troops more effective or whatever. You know, it's got a little bit of every. The only thing this thing is really missing, this codex is missing, is like a good armor save.
You know, I'm not sad about that.
Yeah. It doesn't have a ton of long-range fire, but it does have really good shooting in the form of the horrors and what. Have you heard about the horrors and the ability of Tzeentch?
Let's talk about it.
So the horrors have Coruscating Flames, which is an 18-inch range weapon. It's Assault 2, Strength User, AP 0, Damage 1, and Pink Horrors are Strength 3, but they have the Magical Horde rule, which is change the type of this unit's Coruscating Flames to Assault 3, while this unit contains 20 or more pink horrors. And then they've got the ability to the Flickering Flames, which is Flickering Flames has a warp charge value of 5. If manifested, pick a friendly Tzeentch demon unit within 18 inches of the psyker. Until your next psychic phase, add 1 to any wound rolls made for this unit's shooting weapon. So potentially Assault 3, if you've gone deep on the horrors. Strength 3, which means you're typically going to be needing 5s on a lot of things, but then it's going to mean it bring it down to 4.
That also means you can wound even gigantically large things on a 5.
Yes.
And with Assault 3 on a block of 30, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you're killing.
Yeah.
You're doing lots of wounds.
That's so much better than just plus 1 strength. Like that you, people can't overlook that. When it's add 1 to the wound roll, you know, that's so much stronger than just plus 1 strength because it manipulates the chart exponentially.
I agree with you on that. I think that's something whenever you see anything that manipulates the dice, you know, we talk about this all the time. I won't beat the point to death, but anything that changes that die roll is incredibly powerful. And when you see it in a codex that you're playing, you should really consider using it.
Yeah. And Fierce Charge is so 7th edition anyways. All right.
So that's one of the ways that the horrors can make themselves effective in the shooting. And it's 20 more pink horrors. So it's rewarding you for taking the pinks as opposed to the blues and the brimstones for that magical horde rule.
Yeah, that's a seriously good incentive. I believe that's a change from the index. I don't believe they had that rule in the index. And I'm happy to see it. You really have great reasons to take the pink horror now, in my opinion, and I want a million of them.
What is the range of their shot again?
18 inches, but that's it's assault. Big. It's assault too.
That's big.
So I mean, they could technically move, advance, shoot.
Or summon on in.
Yeah, oh yeah, summon them 12 inches up, you know, with outside of 9 inches or whatever, and shoot away.
Hold on, but the internet told me that summoning sucks.
Lots of summoning is probably not a good idea. Some summoning, really good idea.
Summoning.
There you go.
Oh, that's a great article title.
I'm going to give you that.
I like it.
I don't know why I hang around you guys.
we talked a lot about the new Nurgle characters on the last episode, but I'm still a big fan of Horticus Slimix.
That slug's pretty amazing.
Yeah. We did not talk about Epidemius and his tally. I believe the tally to be the same, and you guys can confirm me with this in the index. This is the tally of Pestilence starts the battle at 0. Add 1 to the tally whenever a unit, friend, or foe is destroyed by Nurgle demons. And I think the friend or foe is important because if you're fighting Nurgle and you're the one with Epidemius, you know, you're racking up the tally.
Yep.
Because... Yeah. In his tally, it says reroll hit rolls of 1. This is 0 to 1 is no effect. So the first unit, you get nothing. 2 units, reroll hit rolls of 1 for all friendly Nurgle demons. Tally number 3, increase the move characteristic for friendly Nurgle demons by 1. The next one is increase strength characteristic of friendly Nurgle demons by 1. Increase the toughness characteristics of friendly Nurgle demons by 1 is the next one. And then increase attacks of all of friendly Nurgle demons by 1. And then 7 or more is reroll 1s. For friendly Nurgle demons' disgustingly resilient ability.
And no, it doesn't go above 7.
Yeah, that's it, just 7.
Because Nurgle.
Well, what's beautiful about this, though, is you get a block of 30 dudes walking with Epidemus, and you throw out your Alpha Strike units, and this unit becomes, holy God, like, powerful. It almost becomes a Death Star.
Yeah, if you have a way of killing, of removing lots of units with Nurgle. And that's kind of the trick. Now, I know we talk about they have a lot of mortal wound generating stuff, but they're not really fast. You know, the only thing they have that moves decent is the plague drones.
All beasts.
Yeah. I guess even them, you know, they're not, but by themselves, the beasts themselves are not really killers.
No.
The only thing that you're going fast and doing a lot of damage with is potentially the plague drones. And that's really your only thing. You've got to. So if you're betting on Epidemius, I think that your opponent will then start to make sure that you don't kill a ton of stuff until they, you know, can absolutely unavoidable.
This is another instance where clarification on the intent behind keywords is unbelievably important, because all the Death Guard vehicles, all the new ones, are all Demon and Nurgle, and as is Mortarion, and would work with the Tally. And I can't tell you how many lists I've written that based around that concept. It's a great number, perhaps more than seven.
could be exactly seven. Seven good ones. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, well, I hope it works that way, because those units do provide a way to raise the Tally. But again, right. We'll see, given our concept with the keywords, if that gets put into question.
Yeah, and Beast of Nurgle only moves six, by the way. But they do get the heroic intervention rule. They can potentially move a little bit further as if they were characters.
And they get a couple buffs from some other units that you would run with them. If you're running Beast of Nurgle, there are other key units the Slimex.
You're taking Horticus Slimex, yes.
Yeah, and so that's where he slingshots them a little bit and stuff like that too. But they're not the fastest, but they are faster.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that if you are playing someone with the Tally Man, I would be really concerned with the momentum of the game.
Yeah, you're winning more in the back end of the game than the front end, for sure.
Guys, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about more about this stuff and then some upcoming tournaments.
Cool.
Frontline Gaming is excited to announce that tickets are now on sale for the LVO 2018. Taking place January 26th through the 28th at Bally's Casino in Las Vegas, the event will feature gaming, seminars, and social events. Don't wait. Get your tickets at lasvegasopen.net today.
Hey, everybody. We are back. I still got Chris Morgan.
What's up?
And Horton Doughton.
Hey, hey.
Justin Troop's not feeling well. He's decided to take the rest half of this episode off. He's earned it.
Yep. Nurgle's Rot strikes again.
It's everywhere, man. It's rough.
Yep. I've got too much corn in me to suffer from it.
The rage keeps you open.
The corn rage keeps me going.
Well, I'm happy to talk about some tournaments that are coming up. Like this weekend specifically, there is the Scarab Gaming Convention. This is a full-on gaming convention where they have gaming of all type going on all weekend with absolutely some of the nicest folks that you're going to meet. And it's just a really great environment. And they have several miniature gaming tournaments, one of them being a host of a Warzone-style tournament, Warzone Columbia. I've gone to this several years in a row. I'm unfortunately not able to make this one, but Horton, you're going to be there.
I'm going to be there. Got to represent.
I'm rolling my registration over till the next year. I will be there next year, again, as I've been there in previous years. Hate to miss it. The folks that put that on, friends that we've met through the hobby, and just great folks, great people. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, I hope they expand it. It continually fills up just from word of mouth. So I hope it will. It's got the following to grow into something huge, and I only hope that it does.
Well, if you're in the area, it's like I said, it is a gaming convention. It's worth going. They have some vendors there. They've got all type of organized gaming events. Heck, me and Ricky and his crew, they have a bridge cruise simulator game that they have there, where you get to
one of those role play type things.
Well, it's computer. It's on the computer. You are. As if you are on the bridge of the Enterprise, but it's not called the Enterprise. It's called something else.
Yeah, I remember doing something like that. There was like a Klingon language learning software that my parents bought at one point. Like back when having a microphone on your computer was like a big deal.
I'm sure it is just like that. But that's just where I'm going. They've got board games. They've got computer type games. They've got role-playing games. They've got other miniature game tournaments like War Machine and stuff going on throughout the whole weekend if you're in the area. And you haven't checked, even you aren't aware of it, it's worth watching. If you're even several hours away, a couple hours away, it's worth going just because it's just a real nice environment.
I mean, oh, yeah, Horton, it's a great.
Horton, you've been several years, right?
Last year was my first year there.
Oh, well, there you go. It was enough to go back.
And so it was great. It was enough to go back, right? I had a good time, and so I'm looking forward to going back.
Awesome. And then, of course, at the end of the month, we've got the Las Vegas Open. Chris and I will be there, and others. Yep. I mean, at least, 498 of our closest friends will also be there.
That's right. Yeah, there's a giant – I just saw the map of the convention hall and all the tables that are being laid out there, and this giant hall just full of – 40K players. It's going to be great, guys.
I cannot wait. I've changed my list around. I'm really excited, of course. You know, I get this way with it, with every tournament. I tweak the list and stuff. And on the way home today, I'm driving home and I'm thinking about the Librarian Dreadnought that I have in the list and why I have him in the list. You know, I just said, you know what? Forget it. I'm taking Mephiston.
I mean, Mephiston's pretty good.
I think he's really good. No,
well, it's the two denies that actually put it over the edge to me. The fact that he's a little bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. Than the Librarian Dreadnought, and he gets to deny the witch.
Yeah, that tends to kind of sell it to me as well, is just the extra denial when you're not throwing out a bunch of psychers with the Blood Angels list, right? I mean, maybe you'll have three psychers.
You could,
but I'm not sure that's the best way to run them. So having any extra chance to deny just really helps when you are going against something that's more maybe smite spam oriented or has enemy psychers.
Well, he's kind of like an assassin in his role, if you ask me. I mean, he can go up and beat down a unit, but I'm talking about an assassin like Codex Inquisition type assassin in his role. And so he's either going to be in a position to where he's having to put himself in harm's way, i.e. could be smited down his number of wounds, and maybe you want that extra defense with his psychic powers, or he's going to be running right up the middle to where he's going to have that smite or that deny bubble is going to be covering a large portion of the table.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see how he interacts with certain things. Like, he's got that Lord of Death rule that lets him ignore damage on a 5+. But that stacks with the Relic Banner, so you could get two rolls on him for that. And that literally saved my bacon when I was playing against the Dark Angels list the other weekend.
Not to talk too much about Blood Angels, although, we're happy to do it.
It's sports narrative.
Right. But I've been using the Dreadnought to gate, to wings up, to move and then wings up and then potentially eat Overwatch for some other units if necessary, or just get over there and do some damage. And he can do the same thing. Plus, he moves a little faster.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I talked about it a bit on the article that I wrote that went up on GW site, just the different utilities of the Librarian Dreadnought. I love some of the tricks you can pull off with this guy. Now, I love being able to put quickening on him, increase his number of attacks. I love that you could make his weapon just a flat 4 damage if you wanted to. Like, there are great things about the Librarian Dreadnought, but I usually end up going for Mephiston. I lean on points in a brigade.
I've been able to, I think, open up some points to where I've taken maybe a couple less Death Company, and then I get my aggressors back in, and then Mephiston, and, whatever. Maybe I'm pushing it too far, but we'll see. We'll see how it all plans out. That's obviously going to be hanging out with me, and you'll be able to interact to see how this list does at the LVO. Can't wait to roll some dice, and the worst case, I'm in Vegas.
Yeah, well, be sure to wave either of us down. I'll be walking up and down the tables doing my judge thing, and especially giving Paul a hard time.
as I put my figures back in the box. That's why I've got to take a bunch of
who's money. In charge now, Paul Murphy? Huh? Who's in charge now?
Judge. Yes, Judge Morgan. Yes. Yes, Your Honor. So that's why I have to take multi-wound characters. So I'd, less trips back to the box. Hopefully. We'll see. But
That's just efficient. I got to commend you for that.
But I'm excited to talk about some other tournaments that are coming up that we are taking, Forge and Arrows, taking a part in. And that is the Valentine's Day Massacre. And that's the next one coming up. And at Gigabytes Cafe, you hear us talk about it a lot, is the one of the best gaming stores in the Southeast, and certainly the best one in Georgia. Now, Gigabytes Cafe, run by just a great guy. Just David, the guy that runs the store, has been so nice and enabled the 40K tournament scene in Atlanta to grow and to thrive. And I'm very happy to co-host an event with them. And this is the 3-man team tournament. We ran a tester for this in at Warzone Atlanta this year in November, or sorry, last year in November, and now we're going to do a full-on 2,000 points per player three-man tournament coming up here at February 17th and 18th. And this is the Valentine's Day Massacre. There is a Facebook event up right now, and I think you can find it off the Forge the Narrative Facebook page. I'll be sharing off several pages as we move along, but this is a three-man tournament. Each person brings 2,000 points, and the dynamic of this is that there is a defender and two strikers. So when you go to your opposing team, then the defender gets to pick his matchup from the two available strikers. So the defender can actually be someone that you designed to lock down and potentially hold down points for your team while the strikers do their work, you know, try to foil the defender, and then the two remaining strikers have to play each other. But you do have a hand in how the matchups are, and there will be some outwitting and outplaying, but some of that's going to happen in list design. The list design is 2,000 points, and only of the awards, of the major awards, only one of them out of the three major awards is focused on battle points. So it'll be theme and appearance and stuff that factor into the other major awards. So there are going to be multiple reasons to come and compete and be multiple avenues to victory to compete at this tournament, just like the other ones that we do. So three-man team dynamic. People had a great time with it in November. Looking for the full experience here. We can have a ton of teams. And so if there are people interested in coming from out of town, please let me know. You can register at the store, and I believe maybe off the link in the event. If you're coming and you need some ideas about places to stay for that weekend, I will certainly let you know. So if you're interested and you're curious about places near the event to stay, because it's not at a hotel, this is at the game store. But I have good news for you. The game store serves beer.
Anytime you don't have to go anywhere else to get nice beverages and snacks is a win.
Yeah, they have a full service kitchen there. The reason it's called Gigabytes, as in Bites to Eat Cafe, is because they serve. They got good stuff there. It's a destination spot. Like I said, if I worked near there, I think I'd have lunch there every day.
That sounds like, yeah, I could see myself doing something similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's so cool.
I just got to say, I love the novelty of some of these different team format tournaments. It's one of those things that I would love to emulate in the area here, just because we've often done just the 1v1 tournaments as the community in my local area has been growing. Now, you know, with the headcount that we're getting at our RTTs and things, there's definitely interest on getting some team tournaments out there. And I love the idea of having specific roles for people. It's almost like a mini MMO party, right?
Right.
Like this is my healer. This is my DPS. This is my tank. You know, there's a few other metaphors for that, I'm sure, or analogies. But I love the idea.
It's the brick and the blade and the blaster.
That's right. So I hope that it's successful, Paul. It sounds like a lot of fun.
I hope so, too. Yeah, and part of the struggle, though, with team tournaments is just showing up with everyone. So I understand how that works. But we've got a healthy scene here in Atlanta. And I think this is going to be it's a 2-day event. It will be an ITC event. So there'll be ways to earn ITC points. I suspect that we will get to the number of teams to where it will be at least a major event. So worth considering, worth putting it on your list, February 17th and 18th in Marietta, Georgia.
You just got to find some way to get those less on the southeast of the United States so I can eventually go to one of these.
You'll be able to get here eventually.
I believe that. My earnest desire is to be so.
And Horton, you're one of the organizers of a major tournament coming up in May.
Yes, May 19th and 20th, we've locked down. We made the announcement at Warzone Atlanta. We've locked down a 2-day grand tournament, me and Mike Twitchell, at Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. We are going to be planning out all the finer details of that soon, and we'll make them publicly available as soon as we know them. But we are 100% got the space, and there will be a 2-day tournament on the 19th and 20th of May.
Yes.
Get pumped for that.
Atomic Empire is where we held the first major FTN event as well. And that store is amazing. It's large, tons of terrain, nice people, and beer.
It's a great spot. You said food and beverage of all kinds, lots of space. It just seems like a a great place to run an event. And I run tournaments there about twice a year anyway. And so we just decided to try to make it up to a GT level. So we'll see how it goes. We're excited about it.
It's going to be part of the Warzone network?
Yes, we're going to do it. It will be part of the Warzone network. It will be a war in the Warzone style.
Well, that's it. And that's more of a style of, I want to say like awards and participation. It's unique in itself, I think. And I want to make sure that people know that, again, to set the expectations and to let people know that it's something worth going to.
Oh, yes, indeed.
In June, Forge the Narrative is going to be co-hosting another tournament, the Louisville Slugger. This is going to be put on with the Bourbon Brothers Gaming Group and part of the Mid-America Gaming Series. And that's a series of events that leads up to an event at Gen Con, which is starting to turn into like a real major 40K tournament.
Now, how many people did they have at that last one, Paul?
A ton. I mean, it's a ton. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it was a ton of a lot of real serious competitors there. And, you know, with serious prize support. But this is the Mid-America Gaming Series. I want to say it's six events that lead into Gen Con. But they have an event coming up on March 3rd, the CAG Bash 11. It's an ITC event also at CincyCon. And that's in Cincinnati. Hamilton, Ohio is where the address is. But it's in Ohio, all in that Mid-America Gaming Series, March 3rd. This is they have an event up on Facebook also. That's a one day event. But it all leads into that series. But the Louisville Slugger specifically is going to be organized by me and is in a very active group in Kentucky. They have a scene that is very thriving, that goes into Ohio, obviously, and all the other areas, and they come down here to our tournaments as well. Great group of guys. More information coming on that. I know we're a little bit further away with that being in June, and then, you know, Horton and Twitchell's event in May, but more, stay tuned. As more details become available, we will get them out. But I wanted to announce those, especially the ones that we're a part of and that are a part of the Warzone Network. Wanted to make sure people know about this kind of stuff and to know to come say hey at the LVO.
Isn't it just kind of crazy thinking about how many 40K events are out there nowadays, how hard it is to try and get to everything?
It speaks to the health of the game and the scene. I mean, this is one of the reasons we never get tired of talking about 40K. Well, not that anyone does, but just think about how often we get to test our mettle and put all this into action.
Yeah, it's really neat. I remember, you know, even 5-6 years ago, just the difference in what was out there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Speaking of different things out there, that big great unclean one kit, I cannot wait to get my hands on one because I've seen ways to magnetize up all the options and it doesn't look difficult. It looks like with the way the kits are being designed that they're just so, you know, they fit together so well that it kind of lends you to figuring out where to put the stuff. It's not like witchcraft anymore. It's very obvious to where you can fit the different pieces together and they're their own individual unique sets, like the arm with the bell as its own hand that you can put on the socket with magnets, and and that's the same thing with like Rodicus's with his staff, and then the offhand has different things that you can magnetize as well. Seemingly pretty easy.
Well, see, when I look at that, instead of wanting to get it in my hand, I just kind of feel like washing my hands.
That's fair. You know, and it has the what has become to know to be the Nurgle synonymous mouth belly.
Yeah, it just seems like you follow Nurgle. All right, how do you feel about not having to wait so long to get food from your mouth to your stomach?
Trying to direct access.
Yep.
But I'm loving these giant models. I am.
I wonder what happened to their esophagus. I wonder if they even have one or need one. So many questions. So many horrible answers.
Well, maybe that will be explained in the kit. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm not holding my breath for that one.
So, Horan, you are the closest thing we have right now to a demon player. Of the things that we've talked about, what's standing out to you as stuff that you think need to be looked at or at least examined for potential army build? What do you build? What would you build around knowing what you know right now?
Well, I mean, there are a great plethora of options, but the thing that jumps out to me as the most dramatic is the Banner of Blood for Khorne on a unit of 30 bloodletters. That is so absurdly powerful for 225 points, but you'd give them the Instrument of Chaos for 235.
And this is you're talking about the point cost for the unit. The Banner of Blood is a stratagem for one command point.
Yes, excuse me. So you have the Banner of Blood for the 3d6 charge once per game. Then you think, okay, what gives me the most bang for my buck for a unit that I can reliably get into combat? Well, it's probably going to be the most models you can get who can take a banner, which is the 30 Bloodletters. Okay, so you have a unit of 30 Bloodletters that can reroll charges if they're next to a character, and they can charge 3d6. So it's the same awesome combo that Death Company have with Lamartes, a 3d6 charge with a reroll. Turns out that's pretty good.
You're spending one less command point for that.
Yes, well, and you're spending... Well, it's about the same, though, because you have to spend command points to deep strike them.
Okay, well, I can sort of see that.
You don't have to. It's true. You might have opportunities to walk them up the board. It's not impossible.
Or summon.
Oh, yeah, but if you summon, you can't have the banner. That's the interesting thing, because the banner must be assigned pre-game to a unit that has an icon, but you aren't able to do it pre-game if that unit doesn't exist.
Truth.
So you can't summon this unit. You cannot summon the Banner of Blood because you've missed the opportunity to assign.
That's some nuance I think people should pay attention to.
Yeah, so pay attention to that. But the reason I like this unit is you have a unit that's going to hit so phenomenally hard, you can kill almost anything in the game when you charge. You hit harder than 15 Death Company, and you're cheaper. You're only 235 points. And it costs you command points, but that I think is something very powerful to build around. Then there's all sorts of other support you can give that inside of Khorne. But that's the thing I'm the most excited about.
I'd love to do a little more analysis on the economy of points versus command points. And I think there's a really good discussion to be had around that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. It struck me
that is fascinating and we should discuss it.
Oh, yes. I 100% agree. It is a fascinating element to 8th.
So you're spending because you're going above a certain power level, you need two command points for Denizens of the Warp to be able to deep strike.
Yes.
And then you need one command point for the Banner of Blood.
Yes.
But you're only spending 200 and what'd you say, 65 points?
235.
235 points. And that includes the cost of you still have to buy the icon. Does that include the cost of the icon?
Oh, I already did all that.
Okay.
Yeah, the base unit's only 210, and then you're paying 10 points for the instrument and 15 for the icon. So it's a very low points cost. It's just usually slow, right? You had to walk up the board, you had to summon it, but now you can deep strike it, and then you have a way to reliably get it into combat.
And I think that the demons have a way of getting a lot of command points too, because some of their troop choices are fairly inexpensive when you're looking at, you know, if you wanted to go Brimstone Horrors at 3 points apiece still, you could if you're going towards a command point heavy build.
For sure. If you want to go pure demons, there are ways to get lots of detachments with brimstones. I, of course, am always looking at this with the comboed with World Eaters angle.
When all the lesser demons are 7 points a model also. So, I mean, a 10-man unit of bloodletters is 70 points.
Yes, and I think that's worth it. You know, they hit hard.
A 5-man unit of scouts is, what, 55 points, 60 points if you put a... I mean, 59 points if you put a power sword on them or something, if you want them to do something.
Sometimes that literally disgusts me. Just thinking, oh, you got a model with a power sword and a bunch of attacks.
That's why you got to go the Primaris Marines with the point reduction. You know, 90 points for 10 wounds.
I'm not hating that.
Sorry, go. I didn't. No, not to try to change subject, Khorne. I think that's a really good unit. Do you think Khorne is the best? I mean, I know your answer.
Well,
absent from emotion. What do you think is the best?
I really think it's too early to tell.
Okay.
And I really think that 8th is a edition of so many options that it's really tough to put your finger on what is truly the best anyway for anything. But especially for demons, I'm sure there are more layers and combos than we can even think of. And each of these Chaos Gods have a different specialty, all do something a little different. I really don't think I could pick a winner right now. They just lend themselves to very different things.
I do like the layers. You know, like we're seeing this with the layers of codexes. Like in the first part, in the first page before you get to the army list, it gives you like your base rule. And then as you get more and more committed down one path, you get more and more rules that start to stack up on each other.
Yes, I'm so glad they're doing that. And again, I hope we see that more and more as the codexes go forward, because it just rewards you. It rewards you for playing something fluffy, and I love it.
Yeah, I believe that Nurgle, of course, is getting the kind of a nice bump in this, but that may be largely because of the special characters that they're getting that we haven't seen before. We haven't seen in 40K before, and some that we haven't, like Rodigus at all. And that the aesthetic of Nurgle lends itself to possibly dealing out one of the more powerful things in the game right now, and that is Mortal Wounds.
Yeah, there's no getting around Mortal Wounds just being good. And if you have access to a lot of them, that's what, I mean, anytime you can eliminate an opponent's ability to save the damage that you put out. Wow.
Well, think about this too. Like, when smites become more uncommon, and maybe they don't become more uncommon in army lists, but they'll be harder to cast, and so successfully cast less often, then the ability to dispense mortal wounds in an alternate way is going to become more important.
I can agree with that. I see your logic there.
So I think that long-term, if you were to ask me, I think Nurgle is going to kind of pull away, and I think that things like Plague Bearers are going to become one of the new go-to choices. And what really kind of cemented that for me is that Horticus Slimix and the Sloppity Bobpiper and the Scrivener had the Plague Bearer keyword, and so does Epidemius.
Mm.
So they benefit. I see what you're saying.
So if there's things that buff up Plague Bearers, I think that they will get the benefit. Now, something that says a unit of Plague Bearers, I don't know. But see, and here's the kind of the keyword struggle too, is so Plague Bearers, the unit, have Plague Bearers, plural, as their keyword. All these characters I just mentioned have it singularly.
That's some fine detail there.
That's some nuance that's going to like ruin somebody's day.
Well, I don't know that things wouldn't work, you know, on them for whatever, or I don't know that they would either. Again, I haven't gotten too deep into this, but this is the, you know, we talked about kind of keyword awareness on the last show. And so I'm trying to focus more on that because you have an understanding of the way something works, or because you want it to work a certain way, doesn't mean that it does or that it will. And so the easiest way to not get tripped up on that is to kind of look at these things very objectively, and to be very mindful. Be like really look over them. Don't take it for granted.
Oh, for sure.
Sorry, I jumped in there. Or anything else that's really standing out to you as some things, maybe it's the things that you want to get on the table that you didn't have the opportunity to do through before, or they weren't as efficient.
We talked about the discount to flesh hounds has me very excited. It's very efficient. The buffs to bloodthirsters again, I'm thinking about more corn stuff because
to have that bias. So do you think that that smaller units of flesh hounds, now they're in the fast attack slot, but not that necessarily matters. You could have, it's not the spearhead. Is it the spearhead that's the fast attack? The Vanguard, it's one of those. I get the names confused, and I apologize.
I think the Spearhead's the heavy support.
Spearhead is, you're right, that's heavy support. There's the detachment that gives you a command point and lets you take a lot of fast attack. But you need an HQ. So Karnak, 70 points, fits right in there. And then do you think that the benefit of having a bunch of five-man Fleshhound units to get all those denies and stuff, I mean, I think that's kind of cool.
Well, it's pretty cheap now, you know. Three units of five flesh hounds, and Karnak is 305 points, if I'm doing my math correctly, and that would give you five denies, and access to demon stratagems, and a command point, right? And those are good. Those are mobile units. You have a demon character in the form of Karnak to give you reroll charges.
The Loki benefit of Khorne.
Yes.
A character, it applies. He gets it and passes it out to the flesh hounds.
Yeah, he could summon, you know, because he's a character again. So that strikes me as pretty good. And the big thing that flesh hounds got now, as opposed to in just previous editions, like in 7th, is their attack is AP minus 1. And so that's a big deal. At that point's value, their points to offense ratio is very good.
Two attacks apiece.
Two attacks, three on the charge, or if they're charged, going up to strength 5. So you put out a good amount of damage. So yeah, I think the little units of flesh hounds or big units of flesh hounds really would have a place.
I think that once people start realizing that they have all these other psychic powers they could be casting, that we'll see some more.
Well, you know, and sometimes you don't have any modifiers to deny, but just having denies always gives you a chance.
Oh, you get a roll as opposed to another unit that's doing functionally the same thing that has no roll.
Yes, you get a unit that can go do something, and while it's doing it, I can also deny the way.
Like if you had a unit of assault marines there, which I think arguably perform a similar function as you're going to do in the flesh hounds, they're not getting a Deny the Witch roll.
No. No, but your Flesh Hounds are. And they, yeah.
I mean, they got the 5+ invulnerable save, but they also have armor, you know? So if they have ways to buff up, if you, say you get to a 4+ armor save some way, then I don't know. I think you're right. I think they're kind of a good unit. And the point discount doesn't hurt. And they, since they come with that benefit of getting that anti-psyker, I mean, even if you didn't pack psykers, let's say you don't like playing with psykers, still having the ability to deny other people's psykers is not something that a lot of other anti or no psyker builds get, period.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have any way to deny, sometimes people can roll over you, even if they're just casting on low numbers, like rolling fives or sixes, and you have no way to stop it, then the power still goes off. But just having a shot to deny it, you know, if they roll a five or six, is very, very handy.
Yeah, and I think getting it on it does not strike me that you're paying points for that with this unit.
No, I think it's just kind of one of those cool things that's just incorporated into them as a total. If you, their stat line and attacks totally justify their points value.
Gotcha. I don't think Demon Princes changed in this. Are you a fan of taking Demon Princes in a demon list? I mean, I know they're real popular in Chaos Space Marine lists.
Well, you know, that's going to take some digging into, because I think there are a lot of, they have access to some pretty cool relics. So you might want a character in there who can have a cool relic or warlord trait, but is cheap enough to hide, unlike a greater demon, because as awesome as the greater demons are, they might not fit in every list, right? But if you still wanted a monster who could take a relic, who could take a cool warlord trait, but can't be picked out, I think a demon prince would play that role. Excuse me, would fill that role. So yeah, it's just going to depend on the build, but they're certainly going to have a role.
Yeah, Demon Prince with wings is still 180 points, and I love them. With the Malefic Talons being 2 damage apiece, and getting all those extra attacks, they are really big damage dealers. And the fact that you get, if they're one of the Nurgle or the gods that can cast psychic powers, you get that psychic ability.
For sure, you get that. And I believe that the Demon Prince is one of the few ways in the whole codex to reroll ones. Without stratagems or warlord traits or anything, just a default ability.
Yeah, reroll hit rolls of one made for the friendly allegiance demon units within 6 inches of the model.
Yeah, so that's a big deal for any of them, whether you're shooting pink horrors or you're charging flesh hounds, fighting nurglings or plague bearers who don't have that many attacks. That is a very good buff that, you know, the Demon Prince provides.
Yeah, I know I'm asking you to jump around a lot, and I apologize. Thanks for humoring me. But as I said, just as the closest to playing the demons the most often, your insight's very valuable.
I'm happy to give it.
Chris, what are you least looking forward to fighting?
You know, where I'm a combat-oriented army, and I hate mortal wounds on my good armor save guys, I would have to go with Tzeentch.
I feel the same way with Tzeentch, man. I just know that their special power is going to bone me every time.
Oh, yeah. I just know that every time I get, all right, look at all these threes or whatever, I'm going to have like 5 million threes, and they're going to roll 2 dice, and the one that they keep is going to be the 3, and all of a sudden, oh, I hit you twice. Well, that's neat.
Yeah, good. Thanks. DC rolling in with the Sanguiner at 6 attacks apiece or whatever, and then rolling a bunch of threes. Story of my life. We shall see how that goes. I do like the talk that we were doing about the banners before. Now, I think that anytime you get to use some of these stratagems and plan on them, like you bank on them always having a reason for them, I guess. I don't think I've ever built a list outside of the guard brigades where I didn't feel like I was going to use all my command points. With what we've heard so far, do you think this is going to be where do you think this is going to fall in like the volume of command points?
You mean in terms of how fast they'll be used or how many you're going to want?
How many you're going to get in an effective army, and then how fast you'll burn through them. Do you think that it's something that you will you have enough in a competitive army? Now, I know there's a lot that we have to go over and actually get real built some list. But to effectively use the deep strike stratagem and things like the banner stratagem, will that be all your command points, or do you think you'll have some left over to play with some of the other things?
Well, I mean, the great thing about the deep strike stratagem is you don't have to decide to use it or how much you're going to use it until you walk up to the table. It isn't like pre-buying a relic or or Chapter Master. But I guess even that depends on the tournament rules for the tournament you're going to.
Sure.
I really think you're going to need or want at least 9 all the time for this codex, because, you know, the demon bomb is a great example. Whether you're, if you're taking any of the big blocks of 30 demons with an icon and you're going to deep strike any of them, then that's 2 command points. And you've given them a relic, that's 3 command points. And if you may or may not use a dice to reroll a charge or warp surge them, well, then you're up to 5 command points. Right. And if it's the corn one that fights again, well, now you've used 8 command points in one turn. I mean, so you can use infinity command points immediately. So
that's fair.
I mean, I think you're going to want 9, and what those lists actually look like, we're going to have to see. But you know, you can burn through so many so quickly with this army.
Yeah,
that's just if you deep strike one unit, right? What if you deep strike 3 or 2?
You mentioned warp surge, and that's a 2 command point. Use a stratagem at the start of any phase. Select a unit of demons until the end of the phase. You cannot reroll saving throws for this unit, but its invulnerable save is improved by 1. That gives them to a maximum of 3+. But there's also the demonic possession stratagem, which is use this stratagem when an enemy psyker suffers a perils of the warp. That unit suffers 2d3 mortal wounds instead of d3. That's 1 command point.
Yeah, I really like that one.
Most psykers don't have 6 wounds.
Yeah, that's really, really bad for like little Imperial Guard psykers. You might just blow up their heads in one perils.
I think if they perils, you automatically just pull the trigger on this.
Yes, I think you do. It's funny because it's reminiscent of the it's reminiscent of a 30K rule that Word Bearers had, where they had this rite of war where if you perilsed, then you suffered instant death. And so it's reminiscent of that. So it makes me very happy.
I do believe that without hesitation, you do that every single time someone rolls a perils. Doubly so if it's Magnus or Drago.
Oh, especially those tough guys with good and vulnerable saves. Take every chance you can get to put mortal wounds on them.
Yeah.
You know, 100% there.
Well, okay. If you're playing Drago or you're playing Grey Knights, maybe, and you only have 2 command points left, maybe you save it for a demonic incursion.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's the one that lets you bring in a unit if it's destroyed by a Grey Knight.
Yep, and again, that's another one where clarification on who counts as being a demon in regards to the demon primarchs would be very helpful.
Yeah, I think, again, we're a betting person. I think we're going to see something come down the pipe on that.
Oh, Mortarion's alive again. Oh, he's alive again.
That's that would be like a Grey Knight player's worst nightmare.
Hold this. Yep, just
recycling.
Salt in the wound.
Recycle. Like, so my whole deal is killing you, and you keep coming back. And now I get it. You're supposed to come back like 100 years later. You're coming back the next turn.
Got in the express lane.
That's a problem. Yeah, you got a fast pass back to the Materium.
Fast pass. Oh, that's great.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking about a lot of the tricks and nuances in the book now. But again, I wanted to spend a little time talking about the things that immediately jumped out. And I don't know. I think we've covered some of the good ones. I know we spent a little time talking about Slaanesh earlier. But being able to lock things down, falling back is like the best power in 8th.
I think that's an understatement.
Yes. It's like the ultimate combo. It's like getting ruled in the arcade in the early 90s by playing Killer Instinct against a master. It's like, so it's backbreaking, it's terrible, it's demoralizing when you know they're just going to fall back. And being able to prevent someone from doing that could be powerful.
I think it's very powerful. I think that's why Fiends of Slaanesh did not go down in points, because it is so even to just run and go tag a rhino or something and hide in that combat for as long as you need, or it opens up endless possibilities, especially with the increased mobility from advance and charge. If you benefit from the Loki to hold things hostage for as long as you want.
But it's difficult to get them in a list, because if you mix gods, then you're diluting some of your buff and your commitment bonuses.
You are. I think demons are going to play best when you have multiple detachments that are all mono god. Maybe they're all the same one, but maybe they're, you know, one Slaanesh, one Nurgle, one Tzeentch, something like that. just because those Loki are so good, I don't think you're going to want to give them up.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't think so either. And then but again, you know, this is without, this is just surface level. We haven't gotten like we haven't made a list. And until you really get down and start making a list and play it a couple times, nothing replaces playtesting. Nothing we're talking about ever will replace getting in and seeing it, how it works for you. But until you do all this stuff, like make a few lists, look at what the real points are, because you know it's easy for it to talk about. The super unit of bloodletters is 265 points, or whatever. Well, I'm just going to take 7 of them and always do my bloodletter stuff. You know, and then you start thinking, well, oh, would a soul grinder? I don't know. I'm pulling something completely out of thin air. I shouldn't use soul grinder because I don't think that they're amazing right now. Do I want to bring in a forge world decimator or something? How does that look? A Leviathan, or do I want to bring in 2 bloodthirsters? You know, this is what you get to really see how those mesh up and what you're compromising when you start making real list. So we haven't done that yet to where we're going, but more to come on that.
In time.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for talking about demons and all the upcoming tournaments and cool stuff we have happening this first part of the year.
Yeah. It's going to be a good year.
I absolutely think so. Horton, good luck this weekend. Cannot wait to hear about how you do and the report about what you see on the tables.
Yeah, I will keep you all posted about that. I'm excited to play some games. So really excited just to see what's going on in the 40K world firsthand.
Guys, Chris, can't wait to hang out with you here towards the end of the month.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I don't think we've had any face-to-face time since Adepticon back in 2016.
Yeah, so it's been good. A bit. I'm getting in on Thursday.
Right on.
Try to make the rounds.
The GW seminar for their upcoming release previews is Thursday night.
Oh, so you know we'll be there.
So
expect some reports about whatever we can talk about afterwards.
For sure.
Maybe we'll try to get some live coverage after the fact. Won't be able to do it during the seminar, I don't believe, but at least some reactions after.
Yeah.
That'll be fun to do. And then, of course, the tournament. Looking forward. You know, I think I've got a little bit of advantage going to the west, you know, out there to the west. It'll be like the morning for them is like mid-afternoon for me.
Nice little time jump for you.
Right. So I'll be quite refreshed now. my dice don't seem to know what time it is, but
it's always 1 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. It's 11 o'clock. Yeah. Snake eyes, storm of life. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. Again, I'm making final tweaks to the list and whatever. I think I'm throwing caution to the wind and throwing in Mephiston, and we'll see how it goes.
You can never go wrong with him.
He's just fun to play with.
But and my dad calls him Yoda because he's jumping around, chopping everybody in half.
Nice. Well, guys, you have a good rest of y'all's night. We'll talk next week.
All right. I'll see you.
Have a good one.
Go ahead. Make my day.